Randall Williams from North Carolina has graced this state with coming and have, he's, as you noticed in some of his credentials, is extreme, extremely vetted. I know there's some questions about some of that water toxicology, and we've talked about that, and he's prepared to answer those questions. Very well educated. I think we're going to be better off with him here. So with that, I'll just get to it and let you ask the doctor any questions you may have. But for your consideration, Dr. Randall W. Williams.
Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
Appreciate you being here this morning. I enjoyed our visit. Certainly, you have some ideas, I think, that are going to be very useful in your capacity. And we welcome you to the hearing this morning.
Thank you.
Are there questions for Dr. Williams? Senator Walsh.
Morning, Dr. Williams.
Good morning, Senator Walsh.
I, too, enjoyed my visit with you in my office, but I was kind of disappointed that I had to read in the press about some of these issues that I have concerns about.
Yes, ma'am.
And so I have several questions. The first one being, in March of last year, you rescinded a do not drink order for more than 350 well owners near the coal power plants in North Carolina. In a sworn deposition, the former toxicologist of North Carolina testified that you and your office deliberately worked to downplay the contamination risk by pressuring environmental employees to give false information regarding drinking water. Can you ensure us that that will not happen here in Missouri?
Yes, ma'am, and I very much appreciate the question and then would be happy to elaborate on that if you'd like. But yes, ma'am, I can.
Yeah, I would like you to elaborate on it. I don't want to, I am not on a witch hunt, and I could read the quotes from the depositions. I choose not to. I want these questions answered. Clean water is a priority for everybody in this country. And after Flint, Michigan, I just want to make sure things like that do not happen in my state.
Well, and thank you very much. I'll just open up by saying, again, how much I appreciate the chance to meet with you personally and to meet with the other senators. It has been incredibly helpful to me. The feedback you've given me, I think, will make us a much better department as we serve the people of Missouri. I tell people that the number one skill set for my job is that you get up every day realizing what a privilege it is to serve in this position, and I really believe that. To answer your question specifically, I believe very strongly that in my position, we need to be accountable, we need to be collaborative, and we need to be concerned about outcomes that help the people. So I'd like to give you an accounting of what you're asking me today about the well water, which I think is perfectly legitimate and reasonable. 3 years ago in February, we had a large 48-inch pipe break on the Dan River, and it spilled coal ash into the Dan River, which was an environmental emergency. And I grew up a Boy Scout. I grew up camping, and so it raised lots of concerns, and I shared those concerns. That was before I was in office. The legislature passed the Coal Ash Management Act and asked that the Department of Environmental Quality look at any potential toxins that would come from that coal ash that could contribute to the wells around the many coal ash ponds we had in North Carolina, not just Dan River, but all of the coal ash ponds. And those coal ash ponds had been there many, many years, and so the concern was maybe they were leaching into the ground potential toxins. Many of those were things that they're all naturally occurring elements. You can look on the periodic chart and see them. But two of them, vanadium and chromium, which are number 23 and 24 on the elemental chart, they're natural. The EPA has not set what we call MCLs, maximum contaminant levels. So we were asked to come up with levels for which we thought that water we would make recommendations on. Now you have to understand one of those was vanadium, number 23. And to give you an example about vanadium, the EPA does not regulate vanadium because they do not think it is toxic enough to rate. The other 49 states in the United States do not rate vanadium nearly to the level we set. We set a level of 0.3 micrograms per liter. We chose that from 18, I think 2.6 and 0.3. So we were literally in the state of North Carolina being trendsetters for vanadium. To give you an example of how low 0.3 is, remembering we chose from 18, 2.6, and 0.3, I went to the local pharmacy this last week, and this is Centrum Vitamins, and I'll pass it around, but these contain 10 micrograms of vanadium. And yet we told these 300 well owners they couldn't drink their, we recommend they not drink their water for 0.3. They would have to drink 33 liters of water a day just to get what's in this vitamin. The Centers for Disease Control says you and I take in 10 to 20 micrograms just eating naturally occurring foods that come from the ground every day. And in fact, in clinical studies, we have given people 300 milligrams of vanadium, which is a million times more than the level we set. So I'm not being critical of the people who set that level so low, because there was a concern that there was a point source of contamination. But once we set those levels, we immediately started getting feedback from local health departments and county commissioners and all sorts of people that, A, you set a level of 0.3 when the national average is 1, according to the EPA in the 3,000 sites they monitor in their unregulated contaminants. They look at vanadium all over the country, they just choose not to regulate it, but the average is 1, and we set it at 0.3.
I guess it's not the science that I'm upset with. I think what I'm upset with is that the state had set it at that level.
Right.
So as the director, is it not your job to enforce your own rules?
Right. Well, I wasn't director then. And so I came in and we had a year to look at that, and we looked at the fact that the other 49 states were not at the same level. The EPA wasn't at the same level. That we had 900,000 wells serving 2.5 million people in North Carolina that we didn't hold to that same standard, even though the vanadium levels were higher than in these 300 wells we had set that. So it became an issue of fairness. It became an issue of what other our peers were doing around the country. It became an example of what the EPA was doing, and we were out of line with all that for these 300 wells. And in fact, North Carolina has now changed it to 18, is in the process. And in November, 9 people in my department signed off on a letter reaffirming that we thought 0.3 did not warrant a recommendation not to drink your water. We thought it warranted a recommendation to tell people that there may be risk associated with vanadium at very high levels, but that the level we had set was very much lower, and that the state is in the process of changing it to 18. So that's vanadium.
So they did not change it while you were there?
No, they're in
That's my point, though.
Yeah, they're going through the rules process. It takes about 6 months to a year to change it in the Department of Environmental Quality. So they are now changing the vanadium level from 0.3 to 18.
I guess you're not understanding my point. My
point
is that the rule was in place.
Yes, ma'am.
And you chose to ignore it.
Well, no, the rule was that we informed people that there were health risks associated with vanadium, and we had set that at 0.3. We just took away the fact that the rule didn't specify that we had to recommend anything. It just specified that we set the health risk evaluation. We just took away the recommendation. We didn't to not drink your water. We still said that this is the level of 0.3 until it changes to 18. At which we associate risk with it.
And you differed in opinion from your state toxicologist and your state epidemiologist in this?
Well, on vanadium, I think if you read their depositions, you will see that on vanadium, I'm not sure that I differ with them. In both their depositions, when asked about vanadium, both of them, if you read their last deposition, the one in, I think, October by Dr. Rudo, I'm not sure that statement would be true now that he would back off, that he would support the vanadium level of 0.3.
Okay. Well, I have a statement from Dr. Rudo that was, it's an excerpt from his sworn testimony, and it basically says that he was asked to rescind over 400 health risk evaluations. For the residents adjacent to the coal ash ponds. I believe this is highly unethical and possibly illegal, and I need some guidance on the legality of this. I told Mina that I cannot and will not do this retraction, as it would result in putting residents at an increased cancer risk in addition to all the ethical and possibly legal problems with this. In the 27 years working with them for state government, mm-hmm. we have never been asked to retract more than 150,000 HREs we have done. It is not right to be asked to do this, and I will not do this. Can you justify the retracting for the first time in the department's history that these health warnings, the retraction of which Dr. Ruto said he would not be putting, he wouldn't do it because he was afraid he was putting residents at risk?
Yes, ma'am. And so again, my leadership style is to make collaborative decisions. So the decision to rescind that was made by five people, not just me, within the department. And then the further decision in November was made by nine people, and I can produce that letter for you, that went out to all 100 health departments. I think Dr. Ruto's opposition is really more to hexavalent chromium, which I'm happy to talk to you about next, if you'd like.
No, as you know, St. Louis has had a long history with radioactive waste.
Yes, ma'am.
And it is, it's a hot button issue because the more you get into it, the more areas around St. Louis County it surrounds, and it's an increasingly large issue and problem. What will you do as health director to assure the people of St. Louis and St. Louis County that this issue will receive the attention it deserves after all the things that we've seen come out of North Carolina?
Yes, ma'am. Again, thank you for the question. I spent about 3 hours with Senator Chappelle Nadal last week, who's very passionate about this, who cares very much about her constituents that live in these neighborhoods. I drove to St. Louis on Friday and spent 2 hours in those neighborhoods. I took pictures. I would like to meet with some of those families and then to do more work. I've told Senator Nadal I'll go out with her to meet those families, and that I'll go out with her if need be with our team to look at some of the areas. She's concerned about some radioactivity, and we have the capacity to provide Geiger counter readings. I've told her we will do all that. So I think the takeaway I would say is that my style is to be collaborative. I don't make decisions unilaterally. I try to engage all the stakeholders. I had been out to the coal ash ponds. I had met with families that were affected by this. And so, again, I understand where they're coming from, and I think that's important. And so what I would commit to you on any issue, not just these issues, is that I will always be fully engaged. I will always be fully informed. I'll be transparent. I will be accountable for what we do. But at the end of the day, I will tell you this, even though nine people made that subsequent decision and five people made the first decision, I am a true Missourian. When most people think of Missouri, I think many of them think of the president, who said the buck stops here. And I told my staff the first day here that I think I'm the one that needs to be accountable for these decisions. So if you have a problem with anything we do, you should only have to find one person to ask what happened, and that's me. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Doctor, and I appreciate you quoting our very favorite Democratic son, Harry Truman. I thank you for taking my questions. I hope that we can move on from here. I have no intention of holding up your appointment, but I do think these questions need to be asked, and I think I would have felt more comfortable if they would have been brought to light before our meeting and that I didn't read about it in the press. So hopefully we can move on from here. If you were with Senator Chappelle Nadal last week looking at radioactivity, you were also in the 13th district. So welcome to my district, and I look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you very much, Senator Walsh.
Further questions for Dr. Williams? Senator Leibler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Randall, first thing I'd like to say, thanks a lot for coming to Southeast Missouri this past weekend, and also by looking through your resume and bio. You can go ahead. I see where you have taken initiative in North Carolina to help rural areas with OBGYN doctors and other type of primary physicians. Would you like to tell us just a little bit about that?
Yes, I would, Senator Leibler. And again, I can't thank you and Senator Curls enough for coming out, especially Senator Curls all the way from Kansas City, for our initiative. We were in Poplar Bluff on Sunday for the Bridge the Gap initiative, and I have to brag on the Lieutenant Colonel who's following me. She got the recipient for the Volunteer of the Year from the Bridge the Gap Foundation, which is affirming the work of our Highway Patrol and reconciliation with all our communities and an increasing dialogue, which I think is so important. And again, to your point, we think that when we look at the health, safety, and well-being of Missourians, that's all-encompassing. And so when Senator Curls and you support this safety initiative, that is part of that. But we are. North Carolina was the first Office of Rural Health in 1972 to open in the United States. We're considered thought leaders in that, and I did head that up. We feel very, very strongly that's going to be one of the governor's big four initiatives in health. And we think that's necessary because we know of our 131 medical schools in the United States that turn out 20,000 medical students each year, 97% will say their fourth year they're not going to a rural area. Senator Brown and I were discussing that this morning, and I was with Dr. Perez in the Boot Hill, who did 500 deliveries last year. The average obstetrician does 150. He did 500. We're going to work him to death, I'm afraid. And so in an area that has our highest infant mortality in the state, we think it's vital that we get all sorts of providers, nurse practitioners, pharmacists, dentists, doctors, those areas. So how do we do it? Well, we know that what works is to take people from those areas and then to get them into medical schools with low tuition and then incentivize them to go back. But we think one of the reasons I'll go to all 114 counties this year in St. Louis and Kansas City because I learned things. And you know, Dr. Perez said the number one reason people aren't moving there, you could argue that it's because they want their families to have a different experience or pay, or they don't want to be isolated. But he thinks the number one reason, and I agree with him, is they don't feel comfortable working by themselves. They're brought up now in this kind of team mentality. So they've lost the skill set of being generalists that most of us kind of grew up with. And Senator Brown was saying the same thing in veterinary medicine, where people just aren't comfortable being large animal veterinarians in the morning. But I have to remind you that we, the state of Missouri, pay to train doctors. So we have a right to ask our medical schools to turn out what we need.
That's right.
And so we don't think it's an imposition to ask the people we're paying money to turn out the kind of doctors we need in rural Missouri and our underserved urban areas. And that's what we're going to do.
I like the initiative that you started in North Carolina, and you touched on it there just a little bit, to encourage those from the rural areas to get into medical school and hopefully get back to their area. I appreciate that very much. Other than that, I just want to say I've always enjoyed visiting with you since you've been here, and I know you're a traveler. It was amazing all the places you've already been to, and I've seen also where you run, and you ran in the New York Marathon, Boston Marathon, over in Athens and Paris and all over the place in Jerusalem, and you've been well traveled. I think the members of this committee can see the great work that you've done for this country, and we're looking for great things here in the state of Missouri out of you. So thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you, Senator. And I get up every morning. I live about four blocks from here, and I run across the Missouri River, and then I come back every morning. I still keep obstetrical hours, which I hear y'all are starting to keep. I would discourage that. I would stick to your daytime hours. And to see the state capitol in the morning lit up is just one of the most inspiring things I've ever seen. I have a tremendous amount of respect for each of you for what you do go through to get elected. Based on the work I've done overseas, I have a tremendous respect for the rule of law. I work in a lot of countries that don't have the rule of law. My only complaint, if I can make a complaint with the Highway Patrol today, is that I was with the governor one day and they were asking me all about my running, and the young trooper got out of the car and said to the governor, "That kid from North Carolina says he can take you anytime when you want to run." And Governor Greitens turned around and said, "Really?" And I hear the governor runs 7-minute miles. So that's my only complaint with the Highway Patrol of Missouri.
So the truth would be is you don't think you can outrun him then?
My concern with the governor is we're going to run across the bridge. He's going to say, "Let's swim back."
I see.
That's my concern. And I'll drown.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Further questions for Dr. Williams? Senator Riddle.
Thank you. Good morning. Glad to see you here this morning. And I just wanted to say I enjoyed our conversation, and I appreciated the conversation we had about the water issue and what you dealt with in North Carolina. I also appreciate the help you've given me on some an issue that I was working on a bill, and hopefully we'll get that last piece of information.
Yes, ma'am.
And anyway, want to thank you for coming today, and your resume is pretty impressive.
Thank you, Senator Riddle.
Further questions? Senator Emery.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Senator Leibler might want to accompany you on one of your runs, but he might bring his Harley. I had a question on your resume, the item that talks about let a departmental and divisional response and align this state with 49 other states, et cetera. Is that the issue?
Yes, sir.
That Senator Walsh was asking about.
Yeah.
Also, I guess I wasn't familiar with, is it naloxone?
Yes, sir, Narcan.
And I see you made that available to all state citizens. I looked it up to see what it was, and so at least I know what it is now. So can you just talk a little bit about what motivated that, what its effects were, and whether or not that's something that you plan to I guess, work on here in Missouri?
Yes, sir. Again, thank you very much for asking me about that. To me, that was one of the sentinel things we did in North Carolina. My staff came to me, and as you know, the opioid crisis affects one out of four Americans. And I'm sure that's true in here in Missouri. I've been to 14 counties already, and I've already seen that. I was down in Poplar Bluff, as I said, and they tell me that now the realtors are afraid to take people to show houses because they go through the drug cabinets and they steal the drugs, or they case the house to steal things to sell for drugs. And so it's gotten to that point. So what we did is, I'm very appreciative of the legislature in North Carolina. I went to the North Carolina Medical Board, I went to the North Carolina Pharmacy Association, I went to the North Carolina Nurses Association, the North Carolina Medical Society, and said we're going to do something that's never been done before in the history of North Carolina since 1877. The state health director, which was me under my DEA number, is going to write a standing order so any of North Carolina's 10 million citizens can go in and get naloxone, which is a life-saving drug that literally, if you have it available and somebody overdoses, you'll save their life. If you don't have it, they will die in front of your eyes. And that happened. That was happening in North Carolina to the point that it was killing more people than guns, AIDS, or car accidents. So my staff told me that, well, you can just do this. We've checked it statutorily. Your license might be a little bit under question, but you can do this. And I said, no. We're going to go to the legislature and get them to enact a law to do this. And my staff told me, you know, I don't know if you want to do that. There will be a lot of opposition from things. And I said, no, I think we ought to be collaborative. And so we went, and what a credit to the legislature. We had five testimonies where I testified just like this at length. They asked very hard questions. We had eight votes, never had a negative vote. It passed unanimously eight times, such that right now in North Carolina, I looked at the statistics the other day, we are saving lives, and these are loved ones' lives. This is your brother who overdoses in his room, and you're 15 years old, and you have a little nasal spray that you put in his nose, and he lives. So we're very much interested in sending this to Missouri as a start. But on this issue, this is the number one public health crisis in the United States. And we feel as an executive branch that it is the responsibility of us to own this. So we will be putting forth a very comprehensive strategy on opioids, including the naloxone, which we hope to make available by state order.
Yes, kind of a follow-up question on that. According to the information that I discovered, it says that the price of the auto injectors has increased from $690 in 2014 to $4,500 in 2016. Can
yes.
you comment on what you
Absolutely.
Think is going on there?
Because anytime we submit a bill to the legislature, we have to do a fiscal analysis. So what we did was we disallowed that drug. So now in North Carolina, under the Medicaid order and the standing order, you can only get the nasal spray, which is about $120, or the injection, which is about $45. And so because we disallowed the auto injector, which up in North Carolina went up to $4,000, we will actually save money this year in North Carolina, taking care of 10 million people,
whereas before in North Carolina, I can't remember the exact number, but because we were paying $4,000 or $700 for a drug, our fiscal analysis was we'll actually save money taking care of a lot more people.
Okay. You also, I think, met, I mean, there's been some discussion here about you're a tire kicker, and I think all of us appreciate that, but I think you met with some of my constituents on some of the in-home care and some
yes,
of the
sir.
Other things
I
just
did.
A week or two ago.
Yes,
can
sir.
You give me, I have not talked to them, can you give me just a brief report on yeah. how that meeting went and whether it was valuable to
it,
you?
It they are so valuable. First of all, I think that I was in Nevada, and I think, first of all, they're surprised you come. I mean, I think they appreciate that you will come, especially if they know that you're probably coming to be criticized. But I think that I had a minister say one time, the best way to make people think you care about them is to really care about them. And so I think when you go and you tell them that you do care, and met with her, and she was critical of what we had done. So what we did was she had some drafts of some things, and she had some good points. She thought we were dealing using a blunt tool, that we should be using a more of a surgical precision to address the problem. And so she's putting it together a draft, and she and Celeste and I are going to meet to go over that because
okay.
she thinks she has a better idea.
Was there a representative of the hospital there? I think they were they were trying to work it out where he could be there as well.
Not at the meeting in Nevada. Now, again, I was in Joplin and met there with the people at Mercy and going back on Friday to meet with the people at Freeman.
Okay. And you have some experience with managed care in North Carolina, don't you?
Yes, sir, we do.
Can you just comment on managed care, what
sure.
your opinion is of it,
sure.
What your experience was in North Carolina?
Yes, sir. In North Carolina, we submitted last year, it took 7 months working 7 days a week, an 1115 waiver that will switch North Carolina into a capitated managed care model. There was a vigorous debate about that in North Carolina. And so that is now gone before CMS for review. My position on this is very clear, which is that in the last 100 years, we've increased the lifespan of the average Missourian by 30 years, and we celebrate that. That's a wonderful thing. But to help people, we have to do so from a position of strength. And when we have $575 million deficits, it just hinders our ability to help people. In North Carolina, we ran into the same situation in 2012. We had a $500 million deficit. And so over the last 4 years, we've returned $400 million from Medicaid total, never ran a deficit. Based on that model, we've switched to managed care, which emphasizes this. And I'm not wedded to managed care, but it emphasizes that the best health care to take care of the 30 extra years that people live is going to be driven by providers, doctors, hospitals, pharmacists, nurses, patients designing what that looks like. I took care of patients for 30 years. I've been a bureaucrat, if you want to say that, for 2 years. And I just feel very strongly that whatever we come up with, ACOs, MCOs, whatever, that you have to have the providers. And that's why I've been to Barnes Jewish and to Mercy and going to Freeman. I want to hear from them what it would look like for you to transition clinical care more into population health so that our approach to the 50% of women in Missouri who die of heart disease isn't to build more cath labs, but it is to shift to a model of prevention. We're gonna take that money, again, whether it's managed care or ACOs or whatever these people come up with who are actually doing the work, and we're gonna use that for programs that directly affect health. When y'all passed a bill earlier this session before I got here, that was a health care bill. When you decrease poverty, we know in St. Louis County, there are two contiguous county zip codes where you live 17 years longer than in the other zip code. That's poverty and education. And so we have an obligation to free up money from treating people to improving the social determinants of health and prevention. That is the most long-winded answer you're ever going to get to a question about managed care, and I apologize, but it's something I'm very passionate about, so that I am open to working with the providers, with the legislature, about what it will look like. Now, I will tell you, and then I'll promise to be quiet, in North Carolina, we saw the most remarkable thing happen. Centene and the North Carolina Medical Society, which I've been a member of for 35 years, intimately involved with, were on very different sides of that debate about managed care coming into North Carolina. And the medical society, frankly, lost. Well, they have just partnered with Centene to start a managed care organization with the medical society leadership driving it. So it shows that if you're just open to innovation and possibilities, that you can do the best of the best. You've got providers, you've got people with population health expertise, you've married them. I'll be very interested to see what they come forth with.
Okay, because that divide is exactly the divide that I think I'm seeing in the Senate, and our physicians are probably the most vocal opponents to managed care. So there's something that is not being done in the way that you're describing it, apparently, if we're seeing that same conflict between the managed care companies and the caregivers.
Well, and I think this is all evolving, but I think where I would agree with the senators, the physicians in the Senate, is your North Star has to be physician, nurse, patient, provider led. The people who actually do the work. I need somebody at the table who understands that when we came into our present iteration of healthcare, that my partners had to pay somebody $40,000 a year as a scribe just so they could get through the day recording notes, and that can't be efficient.
Yeah, absolutely.
I need somebody to understand that who designs the new system.
Okay. What's the population of North Carolina approximately?
10 million, with 2 million more coming, will be the seventh largest state in North Carolina in the next 10 years.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions? Seeing none, Doctor, thank you for coming this morning. We wish you the best of luck, and thank you for your service to our state.
Senator, thank you. I wanted to use your analogy of the car. I'll do that very quickly.
You, as long as you mention the word Ford three times.
I'm going to. I've thought about that a lot, so I don't want to take away from anybody's time, but when I was meeting with the senator, he said, our healthcare system is like having a Ford, which I have a Ford Escape. I hope you see that parked in the bottom. And he said, the present system would be that you tell people to change their oil, and they go, no, I'm not going to change my oil. I'm just going to run it until it runs out, and somebody will buy me, Ford will give me a new transmission free. And so emphasizing personal accountability, that's really important. So I promise in your presence, I'll always act like you said that, but when I'm out around the state, I'm going to act like I thought of that.
Take all the credit you want. Yeah. Everybody else in this body does.
And
thank you, Doctor.
It is a privilege to be a Missourian. Thank you.